It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I love microdosing.
I love microdosing.
Yesterday, I needed to go practice my drums, and I popped a little microdose gummy, and I'll tell you what happened. I drummed for about a good 2 hours.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I was looking at our new roof, hoping that it wasn't going to leak, and I got some anxiety about it, so I thought, you know what? I'm going to take a gummy just to calm down so I can go to sleep and not worry about this. And I did, and I had a great night's sleep, and I woke up. And there was no leak.
I've noticed a change in you for a positive change.
I like to hear that.
Yeah. I feel like your mood is like very centered.
I'm sleeping much better.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just that right amount of good.
And you can get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com, promo code PANTS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com, promo code PANTS for 30% off and free shipping.
Microdose.com, promo code PANTS.
PANTS!
Well, we're back and we have to address something right away before we launch into this. My manager, Katie, wrote this morning and said, hey guys, you might want to, when you publicize your live shows that are coming up, you might want to get the dates right. So apparently we've been... I've been telling everybody our Los Angeles show is on the 5th. It's not on the 5th.
When is it?
So if you bought tickets and you heard us say that and you're like, what the hell?
Wait, can you tell me when it is?
It's the 3rd.
Oh, in LA,
yeah, it's September 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Jesus, Leisha, I can't with the calendars and the dates. Like, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I understand. I mean, Katie must be like, what have I gotten myself into?
I'm sure all of the people who bought tickets are asking themselves the same thing. Why did I waste my money?
That's what I'm saying. And also, what night are you actually going to be there? So the answer is the 3rd, September 3rd.
What if we actually showed up on the 5th?
Well, these are all the things that could have gone wrong. So thank you, Katie.
Sorry, Katie.
Pointing that out. Anyway.
Okay. Anyway. So pilot part 2. Here we go.
Pilot part 2. So you came over to my house again.
I can't watch it alone. It's so fun to watch it together because I'm not coming at it from a cringe place. I'm coming at it from curiosity. How am I going to be surprised today place? And it's fun to be with you and everyone
right.
to do it.
At this point, I'm completely and utterly like a brand new viewer.
Yes.
That's never seen the show before. That's how oblivious I am to anything that ever happened back then. I'm watching it with the freshest eyes you've ever seen.
You're going to approach it from more oblivion when we start getting into other seasons that you probably haven't even watched in its entirety before.
Ever.
Right. So
it's so much fun for that reason alone. All right. Where should we start? Okay.
Well, let's start at the beginning when Jenny is working at the faux Bristol Farms.
Yeah. Laurel Wood Farms.
Why didn't they just use Bristol Farms? Oh, no, because we were shooting in Vancouver.
You have to pay also for that kind of stuff.
Right.
So just, you know, they change a word. They keep the outfits with gingham and we all get the point.
She mastered the cash register very quickly. Did you notice that? It seemed like she got the job the day before and then
nobody needs to see her go through training.
Listen, side note, when I was about 12 years old, I got a job as a cashier at the local grocery store. Okay. And I was terrible at the cashier.
You were 12?
Yeah, about 12 or 13. Yeah. Anyway, so I was so bad that that the manager of the grocery store at the end of my shift was like, I don't think this is for you. I'm 12. So I give credit to someone who mastered the cashier as quickly as Jenny
Schechter.
How
would you even get to work? I don't understand this story. We have to talk about it later, any more details.
Why is it that, what part of this don't you ever understand?
You're supposed to work at 12 years old.
I was able to walk to work. It was around the corner. I was able to like take a quick little jaunt out of the house over to the store. And it was just like an after school job. It was like something to, why do you think that's child labor? Every kid gets an after school job.
I had 1,000 of them, but I was 15 when it all started.
Well, I was more,
you were 12.
I was more ambitious. I was trying to corner the market at 12. Point being is the ambition died after like the first 5 hour shift because I wasn't good at it.
Right. Well, back to Jenny. As much as I want to hear that story.
Well, that's kind of it. I got canned. That was the end of the story. Okay.
Well, Jenny still has her job.
However,
she's working with a guy who's like, oh my God, there's so many gay people.
Yeah, we have to get
what's
the gay
with everybody
in?
Being homophobic in around all the women of the L word? It's like,
to prove a
that's
point.
What I think is so funny.
To prove
so
a
far.
Point, I think.
I know, but they're like everywhere. Right. Or everyone's shocked that there's gay people or they whisper about gay, but it's funny. Like, it's a funny setup.
Like Tim and his dorky friends during the barbecue.
All of them.
Look, did you see that when they're out to, well, we're not there yet. We'll get there.
We're not there yet. That comes later. Right. So anyway, guess who shows up? Hot Marina. She shows up. And what I found interesting is her check, her bill was $54.05.
What was she buying?
I wrote it down. That's what I want to know because she only had one little bag.
Huh. Organic.
I want to know what she bought. True.
Also, Marina invites...
Organic prices.
Marina invites Jenny to her reading group, which is just a glorified book club. Why don't you just say book club? Is reading group more posh?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds a little more posh. I don't know why.
Because book club is... What's wrong with book club?
It sounds a little pedestrian. I don't know.
It's the same thing.
I'm not mad at the choice. I don't know why I get that. Oh, they're probably reading what they're writing.
Oh, Melissa says they're probably reading what they're... That even sounds more deadly. Could you imagine?
Well, but that's the point, Kate. If you're going to be a writer, you need to start sharing your work and then you get critique.
I get it. But time out. Since when is Marina a writer? That's indicating that Marina writes herself. I don't even think we see Marina sign a check, let alone write. So how, like, what is she, is this like her secret hobby?
That's a good point. Maybe she just sort of hosts these nights for writers.
Oh, even better.
Because she loves to read. You know, it's her interest.
That sounds like hell.
As we learned at the beginning of the pilot. Okay, well, it's not your night, but it's Jenny. She's very excited.
It's certainly
not
my night.
So she takes her up on it.
Yeah. And
then we go back to Bette and Tina, and Tina's feeling really tense. And the word tense I'm bringing up because it's brought up a couple of times in the episode. Everyone's tense.
Wait, but why is Tina tense?
Yeah, someone else is tense later. I wrote it down.
Wait, hold on.
She's tense.
Why is Tina tense? I couldn't figure that out. I wasn't tracking it.
Because her and Bette are sort of not getting along right now. She's not feeling heard. She's trying to start a family. Bette's distracted. They're not having sex. She's tense.
But I thought...
So she's like, I'm going to go exercise.
Wait a moment. But I thought she... they had tried and the sperm wasn't good sperm.
Yeah, sure. But all those reasons, I'm not saying it's Bette's fault, but they're all adding up. She's tense.
Well, here's whose fault it is. The person who decided to split this pilot into two, and I had to wait a week because now I can't track why Tina's being passive aggressive.
I just gave you all the reasons. I believe she's...
I'll follow your reasons. That's good enough for me. But I'm just saying.
She's not being passive aggressive. She's just having a shitty couple of weeks.
It was a little passive aggressive. She could have, you know, Beck, I'm not jumping on Bette's train here. I'm just saying she came home. She's saying, hey, you know, I left early. They can handle it. I thought we could have the evening together. And instead of Tina just coming out and saying why she was upset and having an honest dialogue, she's passive aggressive. And she's like, I'm working out. And then she gets, you know,
she's like, I've got my bike shorts on. I'm out.
Yeah. And then she gets low key harassed by her gym instructor in the bathroom.
She does. She gets literally sexually harassed.
Jesus Christ. Could you imagine?
Instructor.
She got.
Oh, my
seriously,
God.
And the close-up of the hand
back
around the
off,
waist.
Lady.
Tina seems
all
into
of
it, though.
She's like, oh, you're...
She's into it.
She just likes the attention. But it's also creepy. She's like, she's touching her back and complimenting her muscles.
Right.
They're both topless. I would die. If I was topless and I was getting dressed.
And you're
in the back of a gym.
And your trainer comes over. Your trainer of all people comes over.
Well, she's the teacher.
That's your trainer.
I don't know.
You get
she's
to
like
know
the
them.
Personal trainer. Okay, whatever. But yeah. I'd be like, do you have an HR department here at the gym? I need to talk to them ASAP.
Goodness me. One thing that so far, I know there's going to be many, but from what we've seen up to this point, the one thing that's really dating this show fashion-wise, where mm-hmm. I can really say, mm-hmm. whoa, this was like, we're rocking 2002 style here. So far, are Bette's mm-hmm. red tinted sunglasses. My goodness.
I hope after the pilot ends, they've gone off into the sunset somewhere. Like, I need them to walk away.
Yeah.
I need those to be...
like something you buy at the boardwalk.
They need to disappear. She needs to drop them and someone needs to walk over them and crack them.
I think
something needs to happen.
She gets new ones as time goes on, God willing. But I believe she does.
Were those even a thing back then, or was that just a bad choice to begin with?
No, tinted glasses were a thing, and they were impossible to see in. And the red ones particularly
in that shape, though?
Yes, that whole thing.
That
was
shape?
That whole thing. You don't remember? You had a pair.
Not personally.
Didn't you?
Are you crazy? No, I've had some missteps, and I'm the first to admit it. Many, many, many of them. Maybe I did. Now that I'm thinking about it, shit, I think I might have had some. I just had a flashback. Okay, so anyway, they go back to Dan Foxworthy. We're back at his office.
Right.
Is he a good therapist?
I can't tell because he always is getting interrupted. He's constantly not being able to even finish a sentence. Anyway, Bette comes in and she's like, I have the perfect donor. He agreed to it within the 5-minute conversation that I had with him because that's how it's kind of sounding.
It must have been.
Listen, I just brought it up randomly on the go and he said yes. And he's amazing. Marcus Allenwood. He's an artist.
I know. It does sound like she was like on her way to therapy. She ran into Marcus Allenwood. She's like, hey, I need some spurn. He's like, no problem. I have all of my medical records right here.
I carry my HIV report just in case situations like this come up, which they do often. We're not there yet, but the timing of things kill me.
If another dyke asked me for sperm, I swear, if I had a nickel, and he's just always prepared. Yeah, she came in. It's like, you're not going to believe it. I ran into Dan Foxworthy. Yeah. He said yes. He's the perfect donor. And Tina's like,
but here's the thing. At least Bette was coming in hot, but she was on the same page. She was, you know, saying like, yeah, I want this too, and this is the effort I made to try to make it happen. And it was very easy because he agreed within, you know, 3 seconds flat of the conversation. And Tina is reacting. She's a little...
as though they've never talked about it.
Exactly. I'm like, ladies, communicate. Dan, do your job. Maybe he's a shitty therapist. You're right.
I think he's a shitty
therapist. Dan Foxworthy.
I'm waiting. Actually, I'm excited to watch this season to see if he ever gives any good advice.
I think he disappears after a few, but, you know, you can hold out hope. Anyway, Bette and Tina and their miscommunication problems. But you know what the good news is?
But yeah, Tina acts like, what are you talking about? And like as though she's been left out of the conversation. I kind of get both sides. I do. But Dan's looking at Bette like, you're the worst person.
Well, Tina doesn't need to agree with it. She can say, oh, thanks for making the effort. I'd love to meet him. Like, I know Bette's saying, oh, he'll dump off his sperm tomorrow and you go with him. Like, that's a little much,
he's coming over tomorrow morning.
It's not my
problem.
He's going
to spooge in a cup.
It's not my
problem.
It's
all been worked out.
It sounds like a nightmare.
What do you mean it's not your problem?
Meaning Bette and Tina's drama with their baby is not my problem.
I love when we talk about Bette and Tina, you remove yourself so quickly from the conversation. Like, you can't be bothered because it's too much for you. It's too much, like,
it's just too
much. You're always
like,
I don't know, whatever they need to do.
Yeah, sometimes it's just
gets a little... We're only in the second half of the pilot. I'm a little worried about continuing.
No, no. Well, listen, like
you need to have some patience with them.
I know. They really need a better therapist, and I'm going to be more on board.
They process a lot. They're like the,
and also it's not Bette and Tina entirely. It's just in that moment where I thought, for Christ's sake, ladies, but I know it'll get better and then it'll get worse and then it'll get better again. And on and on and on it goes for 6 years. But Leisha, you know, the good news is, that Alice has left her tree perch, the planet, and goes out to dinner with the gang. Because that's where we see Jenny and Tim and their milquetoast friends.
I have to eat sometimes. I can only eat so many croissants and muffins. I need a real meal. It's like, you guys come pick me up at the planet. You take me out to eat.
It's like, Alice, we got to get you out of here. Let's just go out to dinner.
She needs some protein.
Let's have a 3-course meal, like get all the nutrients.
And where do you think we went? I was trying to figure out what kind of LA restaurant that was supposed to be. I was thinking like AOC.
A restaurant.
Or
it was a restaurant in Kitsilano. I remember that.
No, I know, but where it was supposed to be in LA.
Yeah, in AOC.
I was trying to think of where like all the lesbians ate back then. And I think it was AOC was.
Yeah.
Remember you'd go eat there and it was like you'd see every lesbian literally from Los Angeles was having dinner.
Yeah, you'd have to prep yourself before your reservation and say, okay, I know I'm going to run into someone. $1 million question is, who will it be?
Right.
But I'm glad you got out of the, planet. It was nice to see you walking.
Oh, is this where, Randy, the swim coach and his girlfriend start like sexualizing you and I, right?
I think they start sexualizing.
He's like, oh, I like that little cute blonde perky one or whatever. And she's like, oh, I like the rock star one.
No, they start sexualizing the whole entire table, not just us.
Also strange.
I'm sure that's a conversation that happens. Maybe more so with straight girls. Right?
I don't know. But this is the thing that where it's like being set up, like all the lesbians and bisexual people are the ones that are, they're like the others, you know, and like all the straight people are like, oh, look at them. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
I feel like the show, it's reversed. All of the straight people are the others. And the universe that the show takes place in is predominantly gay. And the heterosexuals.
That's true.
Are the aliens, right. which is really refreshing. It's refreshing to see. Like,
no, it's great. You're right. It is backwards. I'm just saying whenever anybody comments, it seems like a thing.
Well, yeah, because it's I think it's trying to establish, you know, the divide.
Uh-huh.
In culture and you know, dynamics and
sexuality.
And Jenny is sitting there like a deer in headlights saying, oh my God, because she's looking at Marina. Where do I belong? And Marina gets up and goes to the bathroom.
Oh, well, yeah, we need to say that. So along with us at this dinner is Marina. So she comes in, Jenny's shocked, as though it's like been this personal, you know, infiltration in her life. She's just going to have dinner.
Well, first season, Marina was part of the group.
I know, but I'm saying, she was. But I'm saying Jenny is acting like she showed up to like ruin her dinner. Because she's so messed up over this woman.
Yeah.
She's like, how dare you?
I love
show up.
I love Mia in this scene because she comes in and she says, you know, and she puts her hands on her hips and she says, you know, this is really distracting. And there's like a good 10 seconds of dead silence. And so much is said without anything. And another person is coming in, washing their hands and leaving. And the second they're alone in the bathroom, I think Marina kisses her, right?
Yeah, they kiss again.
But the way, I just think Mia is brilliant. And the way she plays all of these moments are so unique and they're so not what you would expect. And that's what makes it memorable. I just love her. I forgot how much I loved her.
Yeah. And I know she's seriously the best on the show. And like, also you see the struggle she's having. And then she comes back and she tries to be uber straight again.
And you believe it. You totally believe it with her.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's fucked up.
And then the next morning, she's there, you know, clicking away on her computer in her writer's shed. And Tim comes in, who looks very good in a tank top. And she shades him out. She shuts the computer screen and says, no, I don't want you to look. Because clearly.
Well, do you know what she says?
Yeah.
Do you know what she says?
What, Leisha? Tell me. What does she say?
I'm just really tense.
She says that again.
No, she's, I'm like, why is everybody tense? And he's very understanding. He's like, I get it.
He's a good guy.
Here. She's like, I don't have any friends. She's like, she's fish out of water. That's how it appears to Tim. But meanwhile.
Again, Tim and Jenny, I see chemistry. They have chemistry and they're so different.
Yeah.
But it, whatever reason, makes complete sense in this time in the story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They make complete sense. But so do Marina and Jenny.
Yeah.
I mean, it is.
Very much so.
In a nutshell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she closes her laptop. He goes inside. She follows him.
She apologizes. And then the phone rings. And it's Marina.
The phone rings.
And inviting her to another book club. I'm calling it the book club. Sorry. It's a book club. And she says, and Tim says, yeah, that's no problem. I'm going to go out and play basketball or tennis or football. He's going to do something with his friends. And she says, okay. And you can tell that she's very distracted because it's like her fantasy coming true, Marina, and asking her out again. And so she's so removed from whatever he's saying after he says, yeah, that's perfect because I have plans with the guys. So it's kind of her, the schedule is working out in her favor perfectly. Did you notice that? Her eyes just go off.
Yeah. And he's buying the whole thing. I think she's lying to herself in that moment too. Like, I can go out with Marina. She's probably just a new friend and Tim's okay with it. And I'm saying it out loud. And if I say it out loud, it's going to be less scary.
But in the moment, more importantly, you want to make sure that your partner is not picking up on any hints. And since he's oblivious and she can see that, she just kind of looks right through him, through the wall into daydream land.
It's all working.
Yeah. So, and that, because then she very absentmindedly.
Not like she's being malicious or has plans. She's just, I think she's believing her own bullshit.
Well, she just at the very end of the scene when she walks away, because I think they kind of kiss and make up prior to the phone call. And then after the phone call and they realize the scheduling will work out. She, you know, kind of in a very absent-minded way, just kind of puts the phone down and just walks away from him without giving him any sort of affection because she's all caught up in her own world at this point. And he clocks it because the camera it ends on him reacting to her. So he knows something's up. He just doesn't know what in the hell it is. You follow?
Yeah. Oh my God. I completely follow.
Okay.
You really dug in deep.
Because I like it. I love those moments in the show. Especially in the pilot when there's no dialogue. I don't tell me things. Let me just see it and figure it out. Like, I'm smart. We're all smart. The audience is smart.
Okay, so then...
Marcus Allen Wood.
Oh, so then we're back at Bette and Tina's house. Marcus knocks on the door. He walks in. He's black and Tina's shocked.
Not only
Which,
is...
Here's what I
wait,
didn't
hold on
get.
A second.
He's I was not, like, no, have on. They not wait, had this conversation?
Wait, he's not only black. He's like 6'5". And you can see the way they shot it because Tina's profile because you see Tina opening the door and her eyes just go all the way up. Like she's looking at someone really tall. So you're kind of wondering who's on the other side of the door. So I think she's just taking the whole thing in.
I don't think she's having a problem with his height. I think it was a complete race thing. And I don't understand why she was so shocked. Because even Bette says later, we've had this conversation.
You see, I thought it was reverse. I thought it was the fact that he was so incredibly tall.
No, that's the joke later that the girl at the cryo makes. It's a joke. That was
I know,
a joke.
But she reacts to it like, yeah, trust me, that crossed my mind. Like the way Tina reacts to it. Then later on, it gets the race thing gets brought up with Bette. I'm not saying it's not a part of it. I'm just saying those two things could be happening simultaneously.
I disagree with you in such a major way.
Okay, I agree to disagree.
I think that was just a setup for a joke.
I mean, I don't really care, but it just seems that like the two can live simultaneously. Like,
I think it had 0% to do with how tall he was.
Well, if that's the case, then why was it shot in the way to only see her to see her reaction to like this large, very tall man at her door?
I think they were just getting her reaction before you saw who you're like, who's behind the door? What's she looking at?
I don't know.
She just happened to be looking up because he happens to be tall.
Exactly. And that's a lot to take in. You're like, wow, you're like 6'5", 6'8". Especially compared to Tina, who's not very tall.
I don't think it has anything to do with it.
Weigh in.
Please write in. People write in and weigh in on this.
But regardless, they go to the sperm bank and Marcus miraculously has all of his reports and medical history front and center, ready to go. Because who doesn't carry around their HIV results?
Right.
I mean,
I have mine in my glove compartment.
I keep mine in my wallet. I mean, just in case
somebody wants my eggs. Exactly. Okay, listen. Well, this is the first time you see Alice have an exit plan of some sort. She knows where the door is at the planet. We see her actually physically leave. So that's exciting. She knows how to get out. In case of a fire or a different social occasion she might need to get to. Work, probably. She probably needs to get to work. Anyway, Tina's really upset about this whole thing.
And she goes back to Dan Foxworthy, and Bette's not there. And he says,
"Is it how many times do they go a day?
Well, or that's a week? What I was going to ask.
Are they in therapy all week?
Well, that's what I wanted to, that's what I'm curious about. I can't track the timeline. Is this in 2 days, a week, 2 weeks?
I think it has to be longer than within the week. And so personally, if I was in therapy, if I was in couples therapy more than twice a week, I would pretty much know that we weren't going to make it.
I think the pilot, the entire 2-hour pilot encompasses 2 weeks, 12 days.
Okay, well, we're at 3 times at Dan Foxworthy's already.
Well, they're in dire straits.
So I'm guessing they go twice a week. That's woof. So they're pretty serious. All right, we had that wrong. Tina's going to see Dan Foxworthy by herself, which is totally normal. Although I do hear you're not supposed to share.
Yeah, don't you have to have your own
individual therapist
as a couples therapist?
That you should have a separate couples therapist.
Exactly. Well,
so they've gotten that wrong.
She's breaking the rules.
Bette and Tina, they should have. It might have helped if Tina and Bette were seeing other people.
Well,
no wonder Dan is. You can tell he sides with Tina. It's because she's going to see him alone. So she's like,
"How am I supposed to know? Those scenes are like 5 minutes. Those scenes are like 5 minutes long." I can't tell what the hell Dan Foxworthy thinks.
Rocket Money. I used Rocket Money again last week.
How many? Are you okay?
I don't know.
You have
a lot of
subscriptions you forget about.
You know what it is? Because I get these apps and you have to pay for everything you get these days. And I think, all right, well, I'll use this for a few days and I'll cancel it. But I forget.
And you have forget to have every week that you forgot last week.
Yes.
Thank God you have Rocket Money. Before I started using Rocket Money myself, I thought I had about 6 subscriptions. No, Kate, I had 15.
15?
Yes. I was like, clear it, get rid of it. And Rocket Money is like, we have your back. Because Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can start to grow your savings.
Plus, Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million dollars in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features.
So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/pants. That's rocketmoney.com/pants. Say it, Kate.
That's rocketmoney.com/pants.
Anyway, so then we're back with Jenny, and Tim is allowed to read Jenny's work finally. And once again, Tim is a good guy. And he says the sweetest thing imaginable, how he's proud of her, how he knows that she has to go to these dark places and it scares him, but, you know, he lets her do it. And then this work of art comes pouring out as a result. And he's just so proud to have her in his life. Meanwhile, all she wants to do is shut up Marina, but that's beside the point. He's a nice guy.
She's
Tim.
Thanks, babe.
I'm feeling it for Tim in this one, big time. Poor Tim is getting the shaft.
He breaks my heart.
He's adorable.
Because we know what's going on.
Right.
I have to say one thing going back to the Dan Foxworthy scene. I'm so sorry, Kate.
God, why?
I thought Tina's name was Tina Kennard. The whole entire 6 seasons. Guess how she said it?
How?
Kennard.
Oh.
Tina Kennard.
Well, then you're not.
So
we've all
gotten that wrong.
You're not a real friend. Can't even get her name right.
Well, you either. You're like,
you'd
that's
think
her name.
You'd think Tina would say, Alice, you know, by the way, you're mispronouncing my name.
I might not have ever said her last name on the show. I called her T.
You know what?
I was like,
that's true.
Hey, T.
Yeah, it's true. You got really tight with her at one point.
I don't think Kennard ever came out of my name.
Well, that's something to keep in mind every episode to see if you actually say Kennard. Is it Kennard? Kennard. Kennard?
Kennard. I wrote it down. I should watch it again, but I'm pretty sure that's how she said it. I was shocked.
All right. Wait, Bette finds a pregnancy test in the trash?
Yes. Are we at it? Have we left the planet?
Yeah, Leash, we've been out of the planet for a while now.
Bette finds notes don't match up.
Bette finds a pregnancy because probably we didn't take notes on every scene.
I wanted to laugh about Erin's outfit at the planet.
What was she wearing?
Erin had a real doozy on.
What was it?
Woo! It was some Nana stuff. It was
Lululemon before it was Lululemon?
Something. I think Dana won worst dress for this episode.
But you only saw from like the shoulders up. So what was it?
I don't know. I need to go back, but I remember laughing. I wrote it down. Sorry, what? I keep saying I wrote it down, but I took notes this time. I'm very excited about it. Bette finds a pregnancy test in the trash can.
Yes.
And then she's leaving. And obviously, Tina's talking to Alice on the phone. You can completely tell. I don't know how, but I was like, it's super obvious.
And it's a cordless phone.
Well, yeah, we all had them.
I know. But no, it was like a cordless landline. Respect. I have one of those. They're great. I refuse to let go of it.
Oh, we all did.
But I still have it.
You still have it?
Yes. I love it. It's my landline.
When I call your house.
That's my cordless phone.
That's what you're picking up? They still make those?
Yeah. I'm trying to emulate Tina.
Wow. I can't believe they still look that way.
Yeah. It's great. Huh. It
you would
works.
Think that, no, you would think they would jumped into the future a little bit, but
I mean, they're a little fancier.
Doesn't sound like it.
They're a little fancier and slimmer than hers, but it's essentially the same thing. Anyway, I love seeing a cordless phone. Again, you know, this was 2002. We are in 2021.
So if you blink, you're going to miss it. But as Bette is driving up to Kit's apartment, Kit rides by on her bicycle.
So is that a fuck up?
Okay. I would not say that's a fuck up because I think there's no way they would call Pam into work and say, hey, get on the bicycle.
Well, it is the pilot. You're figuring things out. Sometimes you rewrite scenes, you take things out, you reshoot things. And what winds up on the screen is different than what you shot at the time. And this could have been an editing mistake.
Oh, maybe they shot it originally on the street. Maybe she was like, hey, Kit. And Kit pulled over on the bicycle and they had the same scene on the street. That's possible.
But that would take away. But that would. No. It wouldn't. I don't think they would ever do that because that type of scene would never work on the street because there's so much intimacy. So that scene always seems like it was inside somewhere without any distraction. I think that was an editing
mistake. I think they're
mistake.
Just establishing she's coming home. And
Bette beat her to it because poor Kit's on a bike because she has a DUI?
No, they just kind of arrived at the same time. I don't know.
I don't either.
Okay, well, they end up in the apartment. And they have a great scene. And they talk about Bette hiding her Black identity.
I love Kit Porter. I love Pam Grier.
Me too.
I'm appreciating.
Love Pam Grier.
There are certain things that I can already tell I'm going to appreciate more now than I did at the time. And Kit Porter is one of them. And I wish I had a Kit Porter in my life. I know she's a mess and she gets into trouble and you have to, you know, dig her out of situations. But love Kit Porter.
You mean you wish you had a sister?
Yeah,
that was like Kit?
Because
I'm kind of like your Kit. If you we're not related, but I'm kind of your Kit. No?
Are you? No. You're like my Leisha. No. You're my Leisha. I wouldn't put you and Kit Porter in the same category. No, there's something like
so what is Kit? What would Kit give you that I'm not giving you?
Wow. Well, make it about yourself.
Well, you're like, I need a Kit in my life. I'm like,
what I'm saying is what I love about Kit Porter, one of her qualities is that she just envelops characters with love and honesty and warmth and patience and support. And I don't think that was necessarily appreciated so much at the time. And I'm seeing it, in this scene, which, you know, kind of launches the dynamic between Bette and Kit. Kit is Bette's sounding board. And I think at times she's ours as well. And how nice would it be to have a Kit Porter in your life? A woman that has, you know, that has had, you know, a life and understands like and has past experiences to draw from and is knowledgeable and intuitive and like warm and loving.
Okay, listen, here's the point. Here's the point.
Tell me.
I think you had a great one. And their dynamic, it seems as though Bette thinks she does everything right.
Yeah, exactly.
That she's got it all under control. The way she does it is the way everyone should do it. Mm-hmm. It all makes sense. And Kit's the one who's had a lot of hard times, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, it's not always like that, Bette. Like, that's what I think she does to Bette. She kind of throws her off her game and makes her realize that
she's not superhuman. Well, she humbles her.
She humbles her.
She speaks truth. Well, it's truth to power. You know, and Bette shows up at her house in that Matrix jacket and she's feeling all like, you know, full of herself. And
oh, that's right. We have and to Kit we just, have and Kit just to brings have to her talk down. About.
Kit brings her down to that level. She's like, take off the Matrix jacket. Let me tell you how it is.
Yeah. Literally, we need to talk about that outfit.
Between the Matrix jacket and the red glasses.
I forgot about that.
Oof.
She looks like Batwoman. She looks like she's in a...
She looks like Neo from The Matrix.
Superhero.
I want her to like go backwards, dodging a bullet, you know? Like,
it's incredible. And it's like a hot summer day in Los Angeles.
Like in second season. Oh, shit. Well, at one point, there is a point where Tina gets very upset with Bette and does something like physically to her and Bette has to jump back. It happens in season two. I want to see like when I envision, I want to see Bette like do the Neo move from The Matrix when Tina does that.
That, you know, Mia told us this a long time ago. She said lesbians are always
unseasonally dressed. Meaning we wear hats in July, and we like to wear
boots in the summer.
Yeah. Unseasonally.
Yeah. And I think Bette is a perfect example of that. She's wearing a heavy leather jacket.
Mia said exactly, lesbians are seasonally challenged. That's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, Bette has a heavy, long coat, leather coat on in July.
Leisha, you had a really good point when we were on that scene. You said Angie, Jordan Hull, who plays Angie now in this new iteration, looks like Pam.
Yeah. It's great casting.
You're so right. Do you think Jennifer knew that? I don't know. Well, Jennifer helped cast Jordan. Like, I wonder if Jennifer thought, oh, she reminds me of Pam a little bit.
Right. And I think also they were looking for someone who looked like the girl who played young Angie grown up. There was also that.
Right.
So then we cut to Alice and Dana walking into a bar and we've forgotten to call Shane.
Thanks.
And we both talk about that. I think that was, you know, one of the one day of work Aaron and I and you probably had because you're in the scene later.
Well, we shot that in L.A. That was one of the location shoots that we flew to L.A. to do.
Did we really?
Yeah, because that's on Santa Monica.
I thought it was at that milk and honey place in Vancouver.
No, you can see it. We're on Santa Monica. Because later on when you leave, you both are walking down Santa Monica.
Oh, the exterior shot. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Interior.
But there is one exterior shot. Right. But there's one where it's that corner. It is that milk and honey place.
Right. And then after that little bit, there's Bette and she's giving a speech at her art gallery. And this time she is dressed like a Backstreet Boy from the video I Want It That Way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable.
She's in all white. She really liked the long coats.
I wish in that scene there was a wind machine and she put her arms out and started singing I Want It That Way. And then maybe rain drizzled and, you know, made the, you know, and added a little atmosphere.
Okay. So she's in her Backstreet outfit. She's giving a speech about art and porn are basically the same thing.
And the super hot guy comes on to Tina.
I think this is like the seed to provocations. Then that hot guy.
He's very hot, by the way.
Okay. He looks like those waiters that were at
Rodney's.
The Oyster Bar. Yeah. So anyway, he's like, she's beautiful. Then we're back at the bar with Alice and Dana. They're very bored by the dating scene. There's no one new out there. Then we're back with Marina and Jenny. They go for a walk. And guess what they do? They kiss.
Well, they finally leave their book club. And they're back at Marina's house.
And you know how books turn them on. So they're all hot and bothered.
And Marina's saying, this is where I like to lay down when I'm stressed out. And there's palm trees. And like, she has a $1 million view. And it's windy out. It's like a perfect balmy Los Angeles evening. And they finally are able to you know, be together uninterrupted. Does it immediately lead into a sex
scene? Does Marina have such a baller house?
Because she has a rich girlfriend that comes in later on in the season.
That's right.
Remember?
Oh my God, Kate.
Played by Lolita Davidovich. Whatever.
Spoiler.
Sorry, guys, but that's, okay. You know, just so it makes sense, it tracks.
But Jenny never even says, like, how do you own this house?
Well,
I guess
Jenny
she's straight
know.
Out of the Midwest. She must think, like,
yeah, she doesn't realize how expensive like this here. Los Angeles real estate is. I mean, you know.
Also, the overhead of a coffee shop. That can't be easy.
No.
I forgot she had a rich girlfriend. Okay. Anyway, then we're back at the porn talk, art porn talk, and Bet has a major idea out of nowhere. She pulls Tina aside and she's like, let's just fuck this guy, which I need to talk about this.
It's really inappropriate.
It's very like, no, people can do what they want to do. What I found shocking is it was so like casual, like, let's do it. And she's like, let's do it.
No, it's her manipulation around it. I mean, like, I get it. You're desperate and you want to find the right, you know, you'd love to have the ideal donor. But I don't know. There was something unethical about that. Like, let's just bring this guy home. He won't know any better. And you'll get knocked up and he would have a good night. And, it, you know, everyone's happy. We all get our needs met. There's just something inappropriate.
That's what I'm saying. It's such a big deal to like, I mean, listen, I shouldn't talk because Alice just had a threesome in the back of your bar last season, but
lying to the guy, like not wanting to fill him in on the you know.
Oh, you're talking about that side. I'm talking about how sort of flippant the whole thing is for Bet and Tina.
I don't
been
think
together
it's,
for years.
See,
and
I don't
they're
think
trying to get pregnant. And
I don't
just
think
like,
it's flippant
let's
though.
A guy.
But it's not flippant. Like we've been watching them struggle since the moment we met them. They're like, oh my god, this hot guy just came out of left field. Let's go for it. Fuck it. Who cares? Like, what have we got to lose?
I can think of a lot they would have to lose.
Well, I mean, granted, they don't know anything about his, you know,
like,
history.
That could go
and
horribly wrong.
Hey, listen, you know.
Meanwhile, they're like, Marcus has to have all his papers, but this guy's like, it's all a go with this guy.
They're enchanted by
how
good looking
he is. Nobody talks about paperwork in that scene.
No, it's because they're enchanted that this, that really good looking guy.
I mean, they're not even drunk or anything. They're just like, totally flat sober and just like.
I mean, Leisha, you had a really good point in this. Then you know, then it cuts back to you, Aaron and I, and we just have to state that you, Aaron, and myself barely worked.
Oh my God. We worked one day out of like 3 weeks.
Like we would go,
and that was one of the days.
What we would do while everyone else is at work filming and like, you know, actressing their way, you know, to high heavens, the three of us would be shopping on Robson with our per diem and going out to dinners because.
Well, because the dollar was worth twice as much as the Canadian dollar.
Yeah,
so we were
it was like
we felt
it was
so
like fucking,
rich.
It was fucking Christmas. And
it's like the first time I had ever made money.
Yeah, me too.
It was like, wait, I don't really have to go to work and I have a paycheck and it's twice as, my dollar's twice as much as yours.
And then I get fun money to like, quote unquote, eat mm-hmm. per diem anyway, that you can do whatever you like with and it's in cash.
Right, because this is before we knew we knew if the show was going to get picked up. We were just shooting this pilot.
But what I'm saying is, I'm watching this and, you know, the three of us are just so like sprinkled in here and sprinkled in there. And there's no depth or anything like remotely like to grab onto. And I remembered we worked maybe 4 days in total.
Oh, yeah, maybe. That's pushing it.
The most time
well,
we worked.
I also
wait,
found,
the mo- wait, wait. Oh. The most time we worked was at that Bet and Tina party because that wasn't such a long ongoing in and out, you know, 8-page scene. But other than that, mm-hmm. It was like 1 day a week, half a day.
Mm-hmm. We were like the little rainbow sprinkles on the Sundae.
You and I like started tie dyeing and like making clothes because we had that much time on our hands. Remember
yeah,
that?
We were making videos. So I think I had a camcorder and we were, yeah. We packed a punch, Kate. We packed a punch because we come in, we do these little blips. I mean, that crispy scene, which she says crispy. So many people would say that to Aaron for years, like Chris Bay, you know, and it's like, we're
right.
on the screen for 3 seconds.
little bits. Who are we even in this? Who are we? Like, it's funny to watch us, like, especially now that we're doing the show again, back to then. And we're like, you can so see that we're all just trying to figure out who the hell these characters are. Mm-hmm. And it's so not, you know what I mean? Like, it's funny. It's just, it's very, I don't know. It's very like, it's the very beginning of these three characters because we knew nothing about them. We had nothing to kind of draw on.
Can I say what I found interesting? The scene where Aaron and I, or Dana and Alice, walk out of the bar and I'm like, do you want to come home with me? And she's like, please. And I'm like, please. That was, I had no memory of that seed being planted for what was to come. And I wonder if they even knew what they were doing. Yeah, because I don't think Alice and Dana were ever set out to be together.
Really?
I think it was something that was sort of unfolding. I don't know. I mean, I don't remember that being.
Well, that's a gay stereotype.
I guess I don't remember it happening so quickly.
So maybe that was a planned out thing that they were thinking about. I don't know. It doesn't seem so.
Well,
it doesn't seem like an idea that just
when we
came
it.
Out of left field. I feel like they thought about it and were like, well, let's see how these two work together. And if it works really well, we'll go for it. And if not, we can always drop it.
Oh, that's true.
Right. Again, it's a pilot.
That's
so
true.
You don't know who's going to jive and who's not. And, you know, chemistry is that weird, funny thing. And speaking of chemistry, Marina and Jenny finally get together.
They do.
And at the end of it, it's a good scene.
It's a great sex scene. They're just like, this is going to happen. I mean, they couldn't fight the chemistry.
And then she cries at the end. What's great about that scene, the way it's shot, is that, you know, Marina's doing her business on Jenny and you just see Jenny like covering her eyes and she's trying to like stifle her tears because it's so overwhelming and it's such a beautiful moment. And it speaks volumes as to how conflicted she is and how scared she is. I don't know. I thought that was a really effective scene.
I thought she was just having an orgasm and covered her eyes. I didn't know she was crying.
I think it was everything. I think it was all of it.
Well, sure.
All encompassing.
One of those, huh?
And she's like, oh, this is what I've been missing. I had no idea.
Right.
I had to come to LA to find it.
Then we go back to Tina and Bet.
Yeah, they brought the guy home. There's really bad music in the background.
And then he goes to put a condom on and they try to stop him. And he picks up on what they were doing, which is hilarious. And he's like, I'm out.
I like how his morals were higher than theirs.
It's so funny.
I respect that guy. It's good for you. Good for you. You have boundaries.
You really feel like that Bette and Tina were playing that guy. You don't like it. That really rubbed you. You had to really talk that one out.
It was just so inappropriate. Sorry, Bette and Tina. I can't get on board with that choice.
You're not a fan of that. Okay, so then we're back to Alice's apartment. Oh, this is the birth of the chart.
Yeah, this is the first time we see the chart.
Right, and I'm explaining it to her, how we're all connected. There's like a hub. One person is a hub, and then everybody, there's offshoots. Tidbit, totally put all the names that I wrote down were friends of mine. Yeah, and we learned that Alice is a pot smoker.
When Jenny comes home from Marina and she gets into bed with Tim. You know what's great about that whole segment? And she comes into bed and she's like, you know, trying to be quiet. And then she like crawls it. And now, is she crying? She has some moment alone. And then she climbs into bed. She takes off her clothes. And he says, you smell different. And she says, it's a new perfume and so forth and so on. And he says, oh, I like the old one better. And you see all of that conflict. And again, she's trying to stifle her tears. You're going to hear me say this a lot, but I got to say it, like, applause to Mia Kirshner.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's just done something horrible.
But she's done something so new.
And she's realizing. So I know, but also, like, I think she knows that this is very serious what's happened. Like, it's not like.
Well, life as she knew it isn't at all what it's ever going to be again.
Exactly.
And what does that look
and
like?
And he's so kind. Yeah. So this is like the launching point for Jenny's
Well, he is also all she knows, especially in LA. But it seems to me like in terms of like relationships, they've been together for a very long time. I'm going to buy the high school sweetheart thing. And so that's all she knows. I don't think she's terribly experienced when we first meet her. She doesn't seem like someone who's had like a string of guys before Tim.
No.
I'm just projecting here. I'm not projecting. I'm just assuming here. But I just get that impression. Like, had we seen that on television before? A female character, like, sleep with a woman and just say, holy shit, life isn't what I thought it was.
Well, I don't think on TV much. No, I think at that point, like, the things that were out as gay content, there was, like, Desert Hearts, that movie. And there was Go Fish. Like, there wasn't a lot, no. Where you see a girl's, like, world completely shake.
Yeah. Again, another scene with barely any dialogue and everything is said, fucking everything. Mm-hmm. And you can project yourself into that.
Speaking of dialogue, then the next morning, Bette and Tina have had sex the night previously, so they feel a lot better. They're out on their stoop.
No. You're missing like the whole major sex scene between Bette and Tina, the famous countdown to 10 and we'll come at the same time scene. That scene with Bette and Tina, it's that first time you see why they are together and why they strive to be together, although they have all this conflict within themselves. It's actually another really well shot love scene.
Yeah, it's like an epic love scene.
We're
like, oh,
precisely.
There's the major couple having sex.
Exactly.
We thought they were struggling, but no, they really have this connection.
Yes.
Wow, there it is. It's really,
and then you
it's
see
really
them,
strong.
And then they're in a profile shot and you see them, you know, coming to climax at the same time. And the way they did that was our director at the time who did the pilot, Rose Trochet, counted down to 10 so they could both be in sync, mm-hmm. and, you know, perform at the same time. And that's how Bette and Tina came. Rose Trochet counted to 10.
How they came to be.
Yeah. I think, well, cat's out of the bag. I don't know why that would ever be a secret, but
I don't think that's a big secret, but it was just a technical way to make that happen, because otherwise you're just sitting there having fake sex. Nobody knows who's going to do what when. So it was pretty clever.
Can I go back for a moment? When Alice is showing the chart.
Yeah.
There's one line and I even wrote it down because I thought, yep, that encompasses it entirely. When you're talking about the chart and, you know, Dana's being all uptight, mm-hmm. and where are your eyebrows, by the way, in that episode?
they start disappearing more and more.
I'm excited
for the return of my eyebrows. I hope so because
I look
have
forward
them
to them returning.
So they returned at some point. Me too.
I'm gonna keep an eye out. I'm gonna keep track. But anyway, that's not what I was gonna say.
I've never been on TV before, so I was just putting my trust in everyone around me. So whatever they were doing to me, I was like, cool.
Okay. Well, sorry, I had to ask that. But there's one line you say that fully encompasses the entire origin of the show and life and whatnot, is when you're explaining the chart and you're showing your examples of like, I slept with this person and bup. And Dana says, oh my God, that's so crazy. And you say, yeah, crazy, but not tiny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a great line.
Not tiny. Also, what happens in that scene is you see, I draw my name, Alice's name, to Bette as the next circle.
Which never made sense to me.
Because Alice and Bette had been together.
That never made sense to me.
I know.
Here's the deal. If Alice and Tina, I could understand that more. It's more plausible. But Alice and Bette, I don't see it.
Well, I can see it in a way. I mean, it happens.
Uh-uh.
No, she's like a power dyke and I'm like an up-and-comer.
Mm-mm. It's like Shane being with Dana. It just doesn't make any sense. Bette and Alice never made sense.
It just gives a good historical thing between the two of us, which is like, we tried, it didn't work, it was a disaster. We've all had those. If you catch it, there it is. I'm showing you, like, not everyone caught that.
Well, cut to the next day, and there's the Walk of Shane in her Tommy Lee outfit. What the fuck am I doing
Walk
in this
of
scene?
Shane.
What am I doing in this scene? I was watching.
You're just being cute and you're walking by and we see that you've had sex with someone else and you look hot.
I was watching that wondering, what is this?
They're establishing that Shane has a sex life every night. I don't know if you had a car. You had a Jeep, right?
Clearly not.
You must be walking to your Jeep.
I guess.
I know. That's maybe. What I'm wondering. Like, Kit's on a bike. You're walking. Like, I think Bette was the only one with a car.
I know in the next episode, that's where like the beginning of the beat up blue pickup comes in, but maybe she didn't have a car.
We didn't get to pick our cars for a while.
I never picked my car.
Maybe that's why I'm always at the planet, because I had no way to get anywhere.
I picked my car in the reboot. I didn't pick my car in the original show. And when I think I got a Jeep at one point and I thought, that tracks. I like that. But anyway, I'm doing the walk. I guess I don't have a car. She doesn't have a car. So yeah. And it establishes that she sleeps around every single night and blah, blah, blah.
The point of the scene is you're adorable. And that's all we need to just shoot. I would be like, just shoot her. I don't care. Just make
shoot her.
Have her say something. Just have her walk by and say something. You're so fucking cute. And then you look at them and you're like, oh, there's this established couple. And it's kind of like they look at you like, oh, that's a life I don't have. They might envy it a little, or they're happy where they are, or they don't want it. But it's, you know, and then you're looking at them like, I kind of want that, but I really don't. I love my life, but they're kind of cute. And oh, wow, they have a partner and I don't. Like, you know, it's like that kind of scene to me.
The two sides of the coin. Meeting on the
exactly.
front lawn. Right.
And everyone loves you all love each other.
Yeah. I think more what threw me off was the whole outfit ensemble. I haven't seen that in a long time.
Well, we know. Yeah. I mean, it threw us all off.
I think that was the first introduction to the flamethrower leather pants.
Yeah.
They get worn quite a bit first season.
They did.
They were the go-tos. Hey, listen, at the time they fit really well.
Do you have those? Did you keep them?
No, I wish I did.
Oh, God.
I wish I did.
You could put them in a glass box and hang them on your wall.
I could, yeah.
Or you could have bronzed them or something. Okay, and then we get to the last shot of the pilot where Jenny wakes up. She has a realization of what she's done.
Well, Tim is making her breakfast, which is adorable. Which
we've all had those.
What?
That's where I really was like, go, Mia. What? You know, you wake up and you're like, oh, shit.
Yes.
You just have a flash of what you've done the night before. We've all been there.
Yes, we have.
And you see the panic, and then he's like, he's making breakfast, which I thought was funny. It's like toast and scrambled eggs.
It looked delicious. It looked cozy and amazing. And who wouldn't love that when you wake up waiting for you?
It was really sweet. And then
there's a ring.
She sits down and there's a ring. Boom. Pilot over.
What a great way to end the first episode. Everything is set up. Like, there you go.
Yeah. Everything's set up.
And just enough seeds are planted where it can go in 20 different directions if needs be. But like the staple mm-hmm. moments are there. And I wanted to see what happens.
Oh, you're so curious as a viewer at the end. You're like, okay, I need to see where everyone is headed. This is amazing.
Yeah. And although I know what happens, I think I forgot a lot of it, but still.
Also, I'd like to promote that the reboot, L Word Generation Q, is going to air on August 6th, if you have Showtime, right? And then on August 8th, you can sit down in front of the television.
Because it drops on Showtime.
In a real cable-like way, and it drops on Showtime. So yeah, it's all exciting. I mean, here we are recapping, you know, the very first episode. And meanwhile, this is like season 8.
You took the words right out of my mouth. And here we go. In 2 weeks, you see us 20 years later.
It hasn't been 20.
It will be. Start next year, it actually technically will be 20.
Okay.
So sorry to...
Well, that sounds scary.
Well, that's reality.
Oof. Well, hey, we're still kicking. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
To recap the L Word, episode 3.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you for listening to Pants, a podcast brought to you by myself, Kate Menig, and Leisha Haley. Produced by Melissa D. Montz. Please listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can follow Pants on Instagram at The Pants Pod. Theme song by Carolina Para of the band CSS, and graphics are by Love Fox.